Okay, welcome back to Halacha from Gemara. Last week we started only introducing the concept of what we call Hashavas Aveda, or Hashavat Aveda, the returning of a lost object. And we noticed how in the Mishnah, at least in this Mishnah, there are many Mishnayot and there are many different discussions about this topic. We're only going to try to conquer a good chunk of it. But what we noticed, at least last week, based on the Mishnah, is that we really have two conflicting values when it comes to returning a lost object. On the one hand, we have the value of maintaining the protection of an item, whatever it is, making sure nothing happens to it. On the other hand, and this might be still part of that description, but we won't get too into the weeds right now. On the other hand, we also have the obligation to use the item. So it's not just about putting an item in a glass case and making sure nobody touches it and putting a padlock on or whatever. It also means upkeeping it through its use. So for instance, we said about a Sefer Torah or a book. It said a Sefer, but back then a Sefer means that it's all rolled up. We said if somebody knows how to read, so they should read it how often?
Once every 30 days.
And if you don't know how to read?
You still have to roll it.
Yeah. Even if you don't know how to read, you still have to air it out. You have to give it. So we noted that it could be that the difference between the reader and the non-reader is that the reader is going to get through it at some point. You know, but the fact that he can read obviously means he's going to use it and he's going to get through it. But if you can't read, you have to make sure that you still air it out so that...
No, that's the clothing.
Oh, yeah, that's later on. That's later on. So we had mentioned that this is not the case when it comes to glass or when it comes to gold, which don't tarnish and they don't wear down. Those types of things you don't touch at all, right? You don't really have to do much.
Eliyahu comes to sort things out.
Right. You don't touch it until Eliyahu comes to figure out what exactly you should do with it. And therefore, maybe for that, you do put it in a glass case and you do lock it up and you make sure you don't touch it. Because those things, even when you don't use them, are still going to maintain their endurance. So now we're up to this last line in the Mishnah. And we had only, I guess, literally translated it last week, but we didn't really talk too much about it.
Matzah.
We're going to be literal here. So matzah, sak, okupa. What's a sak?
Like a satchel or something?
A bag of some kind. Yeah. And what's a kupa?
A container.
A box. Yeah. A container of some kind. V'chol davar she'en darko litol. And anything with which it's not the way to take it.
He would not normally pick it up.
Liglol would be, as we said last week, to roll it. It wouldn't be the way to pick it up. We'll see what that exactly means in a second. Hare zeh lo yitol. If there's something which... according to your status, or according to your position, or according to your, you know, behavior, you wouldn't typically pick it up. That's something you do not pick up. Now, we can understand it in different ways. The way that I just said it was, it's an instruction.
It may not, or is it may not, or must not?
Or
need not.
Right. It need not be picked up, or it must not be picked up. Right? The Mishnah doesn't explain to us what exactly the directive is. The Mishnah simply says, Hare zeh lo yitol. Do not, or it is not taken up. It's not picked up. That could either mean, don't you dare pick it up. Or it could mean, you don't have to pick it up.
Or you don't have a responsibility.
Right. You don't have to. Exactly. Meaning, what's the implication of that second phrase?
Well, that if you don't pick it up, you're not going to be over on
something. Good. Which means that technically, on another situation, you would be obligated to pick it up.
Right.
If it was something that you typically would pick up,
pennies, you should pick up pennies.
Okay. This is, we're talking about lost items here, right? If you see someone's,
that kind of thing, what do you generally pick up? What do you generally spend for?
Well, we're going to get to the definition of what does it mean, typical or atypical, in a second. But what I want to point out here is, if the Mishnah means that it's something you do not have to pick up, but you could volunteer to pick it up, so the implication is that when it comes to something you normally do pick up, It's not just that you have the opportunity to pick it up. You have the obligation to pick it up. That would be the implication. Meaning the only time you don't have to is when it's something you don't normally pick up.
What if it's something that is like disgusting, like it's a piece of cloth that is so foul and so dirty.
Right. So this could be related to the line.
Maybe you normally pick that up.
Right. That topic. No. Right. Well, that
you
could
would
be.
Normally pick up a piece of cloth, right, maybe, or a scarf, but if it was so dirt encrusted.
That's It's a good question, and that comes down to also Gemara methodology. Mm-hmm. When the Mishnah is trying to teach us something, mm-hmm, the Mishnah will always teach us something which is the beginning of that extremity. Now, that's fancy words for saying that up until this line, the rule is one way, and then anything past that line, the rule is something else.
Okay.
So if the rule for just a bag, which is not necessarily disgusting,
right,
which is pretty, you know, innocent, you know, pretty common, and for that you don't even pick it up, so surely for a rag that's disgusting, you don't have to pick it up. If, however, the Mishnah would point out, for a disgusting rag, you don't have to pick it up, so then the implication would be...
It would not include sack.
It wouldn't include a sack. You'd have to pick up a sack. So that's why when the Mishnah describes what you have to and what you don't have to do, it'll start by the very first thing that's on that extreme, the very first thing that's on the margin. I oftentimes say this when you learn Gemara, the most exciting things, and really the only things the Gemara ever talks about, are the things on the margins because of this concept. Anything that's normal, you're never going to talk about it in the Gemara. Mm-hmm. Like, normalcy doesn't come into the discussion because you're always looking for how far does normal stretch. What is the extreme? So that's why the Gemara is always talking about, you know, a slave whose obligation in mitzvot is always a little iffy. Or someone who's blind and their obligation is a little, sometimes it applies to something, or a child, or even a woman, depending on what mitzvah we're talking about. It's always going to talk about something which is on, you know, borders on the margin, because that's where you really define how far normal stretches. So in this situation, normal stretches all the way until a bag. Now we have to describe the qualities of this bag or of this person to really understand what it means, but that's where the line is drawn. That's the threshold. But what I wanted to circle back to what I was saying before, last week we introduced the one of the goals of figuring out about Hashavat Avedah, one of the goals of figuring out about a lost object, is to try to discern what is the definition of the mitzvah and what is the definition of the obligation. And we asked last week, how far away, and this is a practical way of saying that, how far away must a person be to not be obligated? Right? Let's say I see somebody's phone on the ground and I am 2 football fields away. It's nighttime. I can see it lighting up.
You don't know what
it is. Let's say it's football. First of all, football fields are smaller than you think. They just look big on TV. But my point is, let's say you see it lighting up, or you hear something. You're in a big social hall, and you hear something on the other side of the room is ringing, right? So how far away, or how close do you have to be in order to be obligated to go pick that up? And our question even assumed that there is a place where there's an obligation.
I was just going to say, are you obligated to
right.
pick it up?
And in this, and if we're going to understand, if we're going to interpret the Mishnah, the end of this Mishnah, to mean that you don't have to pick it up, you don't have to pick up the bag, that implies that there is a moment where you have to pick up something else, meaning you're obligated to. It's not just, sometimes we think about this like in other mitzvahs. For instance, if I woke up in the morning and I didn't put on tefillin, chas v'shalom, you know, on a weekday, I don't put on tefillin. So if that were to happen, what do I get? Do I get punished for that?
No.
Not maybe.
You get someone asking what's wrong.
Right, you get something. But the question is, in halachic terms, do I get punished for not putting on tefillin?
Also start with what prevented you?
Yeah, but let's say nothing prevented me and I was just negligent in putting on tefillin. So am I being punished for that? Or am I just missing an opportunity to do that? Meaning that's also something that I should be doing because I can get merit through doing it. Right? I can achieve something. That's what Hashem wants me to do. So if I do it, that's good for me. If I don't do it, I missed out. But I don't get punished. So the question here is it a situation where I have an opportunity to do it? And if I do it, great, good job. You can volunteer to do it. Or is there a time, and this is what we're saying here based on this last few words, is there a time where it's not just good for you if you do it, but bad for you if you don't do it? You're not just missing out. You're not just losing an opportunity where you could get merit. You're really being punished. And in I guess, halacha jargon, the way that we understand this is this a mitzvat aseh or is a mitzvat lo taseh? Do I get a mitzvah of returning a lost object or do I get an avera for not returning a lost object? And the truth is, it's both. The truth is, there is a mitzvah aseh, there's a positive commandment that we all have to do the mitzvah of returning a lost object, but there's also a negative commandment that if we don't return a lost object, we'd get punished. Now, how exactly you get punished is very difficult because, and this is way far afield for us, but typically when you get punished, at least in this world, the requirement to getting punished is one of the preconditions of giving a punishment is an action. And in specifically in this situation, it's not an action, it's inaction. And therefore, there's nothing physically that you did that would therefore justify us giving you punishment in this world. Those are one of the rules of punishments, and that's really not for us. But
what
it's interesting.
What if you're giving that object because there are other people who are closer to it, and you're giving them the opportunity to...
So we talked about this in a Shabbos class a few months ago, which is, can you steal a mitzvah, and if you do, how do you pay it back? Mm-hmm. There's a Gemara that talks about if you steal an opportunity from somebody, then you have to pay them 10 sla'im, whatever that is. The question we had there is, when do you cross the threshold where somebody else owns that mitzvah? So if someone's standing in between you and a lost object, so on the one hand, you could say, they're closer, I can't get closer than them and take it away. On the other hand, maybe they're not looking, or maybe they're not interested. So where is the threshold where it becomes theirs versus yours? When it comes to Hashavas Aveda specifically, it's a very difficult thing to figure out because of what you're saying. If you remember the case that we talked about then, quoting from the Rush, so the Rush actually explains that if someone was hired to do a bris milah, he was the moel, and somebody else came in, swooped in and chopped it, did the bris milah. I don't know how it happened. I don't know. These types of things you can't figure out in modern day. Somehow the guy swooped in, did the bris milah, and chopped it from the other guy. Now the other guy says, I want some money. You just took a mitzvah from me. So the Rush explained that's not true because there are different elements to that discussion. But he said it's not true because the mitzvah of bris milah can be done by anyone. And because it's incumbent upon everyone to make sure that this kid has a bris milah, therefore, it's not like he stole the mitzvah. He said, additionally, it's greater to say amen to a bracha than to actually say the bracha itself. That was a Gemara we talked about for a while on that Shabbos.
Isn't there also some concept if you start to do a mitzvah and for some reason can't finish it, you still get like credit for sort of having trying? Isn't there some concept?
Well, if you're an ones, if you're not able to do something, so you can't be punished for not doing it. And surely you'll get something for starting it. Typically, the more common application to that situation is someone who starts a mitzvah has to finish it.
Okay.
Right? We talked about that even in my drasha a few before Hanukkah. I said in my drasha that if you start lighting the Hanukkah candles, you have an obligation to finish lighting them. You can't give it to somebody else. That was in distinction from somebody who's doing it in shul, where in shul somebody else could start. One person could start, somebody else could do it. It's machlokes in the poskim, but we say that we don't do that at home. At home we couldn't do that. The whole situation that goes into that. That drasha was all about finishing what you start, and pushing ahead, etc. But when it comes to this mitzvah, so there is a moment, a geographic place, or a situation where you would have to be obligated to do it. And that's the implication of this end of the Mishnah. Harei zeh lo yitol. Behold, this you should not pick up. That's what it sounds like. What does Rashi tell us? She'ein darko litol. This is a bag or it's a box that's not normally picked up. Davar she'ginai hu lo. This is not just something.
It's demeaning to him? Or?
Good. When we read this Mishnah, we usually define the issue having to do with what we call the chefza. This is a little brisker for you, but every interaction in life has two parties. There's the chefza and there's the gavra. There's a person doing an act, and there's the item or other person that's being acted upon. So when we looked at this Mishnah, we said, you're looking at a bag or a box. Those are things that are not normally picked up. Rashi says, you got it all wrong. Rashi says, it has nothing to do with the bag or the box. It has to do with the person. Says Rashi, davar sheginaihu lo. This is something that you or this person doesn't pick up. Which means, if you're a poor person and a bag is valuable to you, so maybe you would pick it up. Maybe you would be obligated in the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Because for you, that's something you pick up. But for somebody else who's walking in the street and sees a plastic disposable shopping bag, that's not something I usually would pick up. It's not something I usually give value to. And therefore, it would be sort of beneath me to go out of my way to go pick it up. Not in an egoistic way. Not in some kind of pretentious way, I don't pick up bags. No, just that's the threshold of one's obligation, is where you would normally pick something up. If it's a plastic bag that I don't normally pick up, you're not obligated to pick it up. Or you shouldn't. That's what we talked about before. Sheganai hu lo she'adam chashuv hu. Now Rashi's telling us, we're talking about somebody very specific. We're not talking about a common citizen. We're talking about someone important. She'adam chashuv hu. V'ein darko litol kupa shelo l'hachnisa min hachutz l'bayis shamar lo yitol. If this is a person who normally on his own doesn't pick up his own boxes and bring him his own house, he has somebody else do it for him, or he just doesn't care about the box that much, that's probably more of what it is. So then he wouldn't be obligated to go pick up the box. How does Rashi, in halachic terms, define his lack of obligation? Upator mehashavas aveda. Pator mehashavas. What does that mean, pator?
It's free.
Exempt.
Now, what's the implication of exempt?
That he doesn't get punished.
That the regular person is not.
That he doesn't get punished. Not that he shouldn't, but that he doesn't have to. Right? So all of the sort of conceptual jumping jacks we were doing before, in terms of what would the implication be if the meaning of the Mishnah means you shouldn't, so we can throw that out the window, at least according to Rashi. Because Rashi is coming to tell us, this is not to say that one is not allowed to, it's just to say that one doesn't have to. And therefore, we don't know from here that you would get punished for a different item. You just maybe would miss an opportunity. We don't know based on this. So Rashi is telling us that there's something about this person in terms of who the person is that would get that would be exempt from picking up this item. Now, I want to really focus on this specific line, because let's extrapolate together. We're about to go into the Gemara on this line. There's Gemara beneath this, which talks about the first few lines that we did last week. But I really want to focus on this part of the Gemara. I think it's very interesting, and we'll take it in a lot of interesting ways. If we were to, let's put our Chazal caps on for a second. Let's put our rabbis of the third century caps on. If we were going to say, when we have a rule like this, that there are some things that are beneath one's dignity to pick up, and therefore they're not obligated to, what are some things that would also extend from that? Meaning, don't give me another example of someone important that something's beneath them. But if we sort of zoom out conceptually, it's not just about beneath, but what else, Esther?
If it's dangerous.
Okay, maybe it's not necessarily good. Maybe it's not just someone who is too important to pick something up, but maybe it's dangerous to pick something up. Maybe you don't know what that thing is. It's a box with wires hanging out of it. Maybe I shouldn't pick it up. Not because it's beneath my dignity. What'd you say?
Tick, 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 tick.
Oh, well, call Jerry is my response.
Or maybe
both
there's something
work.
Specific about you, like you're allergic to peanuts. And
okay,
like peanuts.
And something, right. Well, that, yeah, similar. Danger, yeah. Aviva?
Or if someone's a woman and okay. something that a woman would necessarily do or be found.
Okay.
Like maybe something very heavy. Something
gender like specific.
Okay, gender specific. I would say maybe tefillin. Right? Tefillin. Would tefillin fall into this category or not?
Well, she could still pick it up.
Right. But the question is, when we think about this Rashi, we think about an item that doesn't apply to this person. Now, the way Rashi said it was it's beneath their dignity. It's not something they normally pick up. So, on the one hand, tefillin is obviously very valuable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's obviously connected to the woman. Maybe she has a husband or a son or a father or a brother she could always, you know, give it to and they could use.
What about the Kedusha of the item itself?
Good. So tefillin might not be the best example in that.
Okay.
But in terms of how to apply this Rashi, Rashi says this is not something a person would normally pick up. Right? If you look at Rashi again, Davar Sheginai Hu Lo She'adam Chashavu, that's number one. Number one is it's disrespectful to him. But then Rashi says something else, which could also be dissociated from that first line. V'ein darko litol. Rashi really gives two conditions. One is that it's beneath your dignity, and another thing is, therefore, it's not normal. So on the one hand, if a woman sees tefillin, it might not be beneath her dignity, but it's also not normal for her to pick that up.
Oh, I'm the contrary.
But you need both.
Yeah, that's weird. Why would the one pick it up?
Yeah. Why?
Because walk around it and say, what is that?
Right. Okay, so there could be, you know, I'm bringing out a point, which is that if how literally are we going to take Rashi's words when he says, ain't darkoli tol? This is not something I normally pick up.
I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
One is, what if it's Shabbos and the object is muksa?
Okay, good. Well, I would zoom out from that, not just talk about Shabbos, but anything halachic. Anything where you're halachically restricted from doing it.
Yeah. Like.
Well, we're going to get to the Gemara in a second. But there are some things. Let's say it's a cheeseburger. Halachically, that's ein darko litol. It's not something I normally pick up. Right. It's not something I usually, even if, well, obviously if it's for a Jew, I wouldn't do Hashabbos Aveda for that anyway. But I'm just saying, that's one example of like a halachic category that I wouldn't necessarily think of using. Here's a controversial example. Let's say I'm Ashkenazi and it's Pesach. And I see a bag of rice that belongs to my neighbor. So is that darko litol or not? Is that normally how I would? All right, so you could say, well, it's not really chametz; it's only derabanan, and this is the daraisa. So you could make your jumping jacks. But the question is, would that be something which you know where it's okay for somebody else, but it's not okay for me? Would that be something where we're also going to apply this rule of Rashi of ein darko litol? It's not something you normally pick up.
My other thought was, I mean, it sort of goes with, it's not just not respectful to him to do it. You're worried about Mara Sion, somebody sees you picking this up.
Interesting.
That's right.
Let me think for a second. We just had in Daf Yomi a situation like this. It was already last week. I've learned 8 dafim since this piece of Gemara. But the Gemara said that a person shouldn't go into a chorva. The Gemara had said a person shouldn't go into a destroyed building or really a shul. And one of the reasons was that people would look at him and say, oh, he's going in there to do something fishy, to do something not so good. To take something or to meet. I think the Gemara actually, or either Rashi or the Gemara actually says, to meet a prostitute. That's what the Gemara says. Maybe someone would think that because it's an enclosed space. You don't want to see what they're doing in there. Whatever. They didn't have all of the crazy narcotics that we have in our day. Maybe they would talk about drugs in that situation. But that's the point. Meaning, maybe you're right. Maybe this is another one of those situations. If you see from inside of a window, inside of a dark alleyway, somebody's phone, so maybe it's not a good thing to do because someone's going to see you going into a dark alley, Right? So that could be another possible example. My point here is to say that when Rashi gives us the definition of why a person doesn't pick up a bag or pick up a box, he transforms the line of the Mishnah to say not just if the item is a nothing item, but rather if the item is something that you don't pick up. And now we have to try to figure out what are the extensions of that concept. Things that you, the person, wouldn't normally pick up. It has nothing to do with the item. It has more to do with the person. Yeah, Viva. The chicken.
Yeah. You don't pick up either of them.
In which case?
In the Chumash where it says it should help if your animal falls, you see your neighbors.
Okay. That happens. Yeah.
Down. And I think that's a case where Rashi says if it's an Adam Chashuv, you shouldn't. He's exempt. He doesn't have to go.
Good.
Help it. So is that based on this or is this based on that?
Well, if Rashi is saying it on the Chumash, he's getting it from the Gemara. That's where Rashi always, if you look at Rashi, some Chumashim are better than others at doing this, but Rashi is always quoting a Midrash, almost always is quoting a Midrash, or something from the Gemara, or from the Tanchuma, or from the Mechilta, or from the Medrash Rabbah, almost always Rashi is quoting, ironically, because Rashi tells us in Bereishis that his job is not to give you all the drushas, but just to give you the pshat. Ironically, 80% of Rashi is just Drasha. That's just the irony of the situation. So in that situation, Rashi is getting from the Gemara. Although that Gemara is not this Gemara. There are two different Gemaras. That's really talking about Te'ina and Prika. Specifically by the animal getting up and coming down and the load on its back. But there is a similar situation about Hashev Teshivenu Lo when it comes to a person's animal too. So I don't know if that's what you're thinking about. But let's turn the page over. And let... what happened to your page?
Some of them don't have anything.
Last week I did.
How did that happen? That's probably the original, and I made photocopies.
I should have kept last week.
That's okay. Where are we is the question. Trying to find it. Can I see your Gemara for a second?
Sure.
I'm trying to see if I have the right. I'm looking for this. Oh, because it's over here. I turned the page even though I didn't have to.
Okay.
I've got both in front of me.
All right.
Okay. If you look, you see there are skinny lines and then there are bigger lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you see the quote from our Mishnah, the second to last skinny line. The word matzah is the first word on the line. You see it? Matzah sak. This is how the Gemara breaks down. This is the structure of the Gemara, at least the pagination of the Gemara, that they'll quote the piece of line of the Gemara, of the Mishnah that they're going to talk about as sort of like the header. This is what we're about to talk about. They finished the discussion on the last the last page worth on the first part of the Mishnah. And now, you know, it's right here.
It's there.
Oh,
that's right. Oh,
what happened?
Oh,
you got my original copies.
No, I didn't.
So this was the first page. This is the second page.
That
turned into these. So you have the right page here. Yeah.
This is one good one.
Yeah, yes. This was the Mishnah. This was the Mishnah. So now you could use this, and Hildy can take it back, and somebody else could take the other one. Okay. So you see, matzah sak okupa v'chol davar she'en dar kolito harizeh lo yito. Hold on a second.
This bracket, does this... We didn't have a chol davar originally.
No, we do have that.
Really?
Yeah. Interestingly enough...
Yeah, here it is.
Of a chol davar, okay.
Yeah, chol davar, it's not in parentheses.
Okay.
And here it is.
Yeah, for some reason, it must have been left out in one of the printings, and then when they later printed it, they said, oh, you missed a word, whatever. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Mina hanimili. Does anyone know what the words... Now we're getting into Aramaic, so the words might get a little more foreign to you. But what is mina hani mili? Anyone recognize the word mili?
Words.
Good. Okay. That's a different mili. A different mili. But hani... What? Words?
Teach us.
No. Mili is words. Definitely words. In Aramaic, oftentimes, the way that you pluralize a word is with the yud, but not the mem. Sometimes it's also with a nun at the end.
Me from?
Yeah. So really, mina hani is a conjunction of two words, of mina and hani, which means from where are these? Hani is these. So mina hani mili. From where are these words? It's basically saying, what's the source for this concept, right? So now, what is the concept that we're looking for? We're looking for the concept that a person is not obligated, in the words of Rashi, a person is patur, is exempt from doing a specific action because it's beneath their dignity or it's something that they don't usually pick up. Not that the thing itself is unpickupable, but rather the person doesn't pick it up. Okay? So, mina hanimili, detanu rabbanan. The rabbis learned, as I say in Daf Yomi, that's how they became rabbis. Detanu rabbanan, the rabbis learned. Vihit alamta. What is that word, vihita lamta? Anyone know? Vihita lamta, like elum is hidden.
Yeah.
Or, probably a better word, concealed, maybe. Mm. So vihita lamta, however, is a verb form.
It's a hit pa'el.
Right, hit pa'el. You meaning?
You would not cause it.
Right, or
you will
not really cause. I think it's more reflexive. Hita pa'el, right? So hita alamta, you made yourself hidden. Lehita alay means to make one's self hidden. So vihita alamta. Probably should open up a chumash and find this. Can you? I think there's a chumash behind you, Adina. Is that true? That blue one right behind you. Yeah. So let's see for a second. Let's read the whole pasuk that we're about to analyze, because that could obviously help us if we see it in context. So this is, anyone know from the Gemara page where this... What do you...
Right. Devarim Chav Gimel, yeah.
That's Devarim Chav Bet, actually.
Oh.
That's
close. It's still impressive, right?
It's a chaf bet. That's a Rashi bet.
I know. Looks like a gimel.
Let me see yours. Does yours look like a gimel?
It looks an awful lot like a gimel.
No, that's a bet. Yeah.
We were close enough.
Let's see. Where am I? Okay. It's really the beginning, the very first pasuk of Perek Chav Bet. The pasuk says, "Lo tir'eh et shor achicha o et seyo nidachim," that you shouldn't look at a shor achicha. What's shor achicha?
Your
brother or fellow's ox. O et seyo nidachim. What's seyo? Yeah, it's like a sheep. It's another animal. I think it's a sheep. I don't remember the exact translation. Yeah, it could be. It could be from seh. Nidachim. What is nidachim? What is lahadiach or nidcha?
Push away.
Push off, like, you know, from yantif, like a nidcha.
Yeah.
Right, so this past year was a Yom Kippur with nidcha, right? Yeah. So what does it mean that it's pushed off? It's strayed away from the flock. It's somewhere else. It's been pushed away somehow. Vihit alamta mehem. What does it mean, vihit alamta mehem? And you made yourself hidden
from them.
You ignored it.
Yeah.
So what does the pasuk say? Hashev teshivem la'achicha. And the way the art scroll would usually translate this when you have a double language is, you shall surely return. Right? Return that ox or that sheep to your fellow. Okay. So what do we learn from this pasuk? I mean, the Gemara is about to tell us what we learned from the pasuk, but what do you think we learned from this pasuk? Vihita lamta mehem is a very strange phrase. You could have just taken those words out. Just say, lo tireh shor achicha o seyod nidachim hashev tivim l'achicha. Don't look at the ox. Don't just look at the ox. Hashev tishivim l'achicha. Surely give it back. Now, the lo at the beginning of the pasuk is also an interesting phrase. But Vihita lamta mehem seems to not provide us any additional information. Right? The pasuk could have easily just taken the words out and we would know the same thing. Don't just look at it, take it and bring it back. So what are the words of Vihita lamta mehem trying to teach us? And even Rashi on the Chumash is bothered by that, at least implicitly. Lo tir'e oto shetitale mimenu. Zeu pshuto. And then he quotes our Gemara. Really, he's quoting from the Sifri, which is also from our Gemara. Rabotenu armu pamim shatam etalim. We're going to get to that in a second.
You have to really involve yourself.
But it's like adding another layer. It's like not just not look at it, but not ignore it. It's like another layer.
Good. So the Rashi and the Chumash is fascinating for a different reason. But let's look at how the Gemara is going to explain it too. The Tanur Ravana. Vihit alamta. And you made yourself hidden. Pa'amim she'ata mitalim. There are times when you make yourself hidden. Now, what did the Gemara just do? It looked at the pasuk, and this is probably the most intense insight into drush that we've had so far, because when the rabbis look at this pasuk,
it's in this pshat.
Yes, but it's how to darshan a pasuk. It's not really drush in terms of like a drusha, or it's not a drush in terms of homiletics. But there are drushot. To like an explication drasha, not a homiletical drasha. So how does the Gemara read this pasuk? Vihita lamta mehem. Don't look at it and make yourself hidden. Rather, give it back. Says the Gemara. Why does the Torah add those words? And you made yourself hidden. It's setting up a situation where you see something, you turn away because you don't really want to give it back. You don't want to get involved. So the Gemara says, no, go back. Get involved, do it. Why does it say that? Because there are some times that you really can hide yourself. The pasuk sets up a situation where you're looking at something, you hide away, and now the Torah tells you, no, go back and do it. The implication, according to the rabbis, is that there are times where you look at something and you can actually continue to hide yourself. And you don't have to hashev teshivim l'achicha. The reason that they understand that, how they understand it, is possibly because these words are extra. And if the words are extra, they must be there to teach us something. Because the Torah doesn't just elaborate, especially in a halachic context, it doesn't elaborate just for the sake of giving you a full picture of what color the grass is and what movements you made. No, it's giving us details that we can learn from. So the rabbis learned from this that even though the pasuk is telling us, if you hid yourself, go, don't hide yourself and return it, the implication is that there are times where you're allowed to hide yourself. Otherwise, the pasuk would just skip those words. Pa'amim sha'ata mit'alem. U'pa'amim sha'iyata mit'alem. There are times where you can hide yourself, and there are times where you can't hide yourself. Ha'ketzad. Ketzad means when. Or how. Either one. Ha'ketzad, how is that going to happen? When would that happen? And this comes back to something Adina said before. Haya kohen v'hi bevet ha'kvarot. What does that mean?
Marasayin.
Well, not necessarily Marasayin, although it could be also. He was a Kohen. V'hi bevet ha'kvarot. What's v'hi bevet ha'kvarot?
The item's in a cemetery.
The item is in the cemetery, right? The ox or the sheep, whatever it is. Vihi can't be referring to the Kohen, right? Because that's a girl. Vihi is referring to the item, right? The item is in the cemetery, and he's a Kohen. So what's the Ad Kan until now? What's the Gemara telling us? That's a time that mitalem, hide yourself. You do not have to go return that item. Why is that interesting? I mean, it's interesting for a bunch of reasons, but it's interesting because typically when we have... Well, the Gemara is going to get to this, and I'm just getting excited thinking about what the Gemara is about to say. But usually, when we have two mitzvahs, we have, let's say, I don't know what a good example would be that you can relate to. So I'll just give you a tzitzis example. Let's say I have shatnez in my tzitzis. I have shatnez in my tzitzis. Now, technically, that is the ideal way to make tzitzis. Because techeles has to be made of wool. And oftentimes that means, and the Kohen Gadol's garments, there was shatnez. There was a mix of wool and linen. So why is that allowed? The Torah tells us not to wear shatnez. It also tells us to wear tzitzis. So which one wins? Tzitzis obviously wins, but why? And this there are homiletics to this concept also. We have a concept in Gemara called Aseh Doche Lo Taseh. that a positive mitzvah overrides a negative mitzvah. It's more important to me, and this gets homiletical, it's more important for me to be proactive than to refrain. It's more important. Hashem wants us to do stuff in the world. And the Ramban on Zachor Hashem HaShavas HaKasha, where he talks about Zachor and Shamar B'dibur Echad Namru, he talks about how the mitzvot Aseh come from a place of ahava, of love, of wanting to do something. And the mitzvot Lo Taaseh, the negative commandments, come from a place of yira, of refraining, of being fearful to do something, to hold herself back from doing it. And he says it's more important to be loving than to be fearful. Love is a greater emotion than fear. Okay, and that's somewhat where it comes from. But here, so the question becomes, why does the Gemara have to tell us this? And the Gemara is going to ask this in a second. If I have a rule, aseh docha lo taseh, a positive mitzvah always overrides a negative mitzvah. So what's the positive mitzvah here? Give back an item. What's the negative mitzvah?
Going
into a cemetery.
So typically,
if we were going to apply our usual arithmetic, what would the conclusion of that be?
He can go
into the cemetery and pick up the item. Aseh docha lo taseh. So now, at least according to Ad Kan.
But he wouldn't go into a cemetery.
Right, normally he's not allowed to. In this situation, there's a mitzvah to be done. So the mitzvah would override. Now there are tons of complications that are about to happen. But Ad Kan, until now, this could be the simple reason why we need a pasuk to tell us. Because if I use my own arithmetic, and this is how you analyze Gemara like this. If I use my own arithmetic, the conclusion would be, I'm going into the cemetery to get that lost item. So the Torah comes along and tells me, no, v'hi talamta mehem. That's a situation where I'm telling you specifically don't do it. Because I know based on arithmetic, you would do it. Based on our normal rules of aseh docha lo taseh, you would be inclined to go into that cemetery and go get it. Because a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah, the feeling of love is more important than the feeling of fear. And therefore, you might say to yourself, all else being equal, I don't know anything about this pasuk, I'm going to go into the cemetery and pick up that item. Comes the pasuk, comes Hashem to say, no, v'yitzalamta mehem. That's not what I want you to do. Even though that's the normal arithmetic, I want you to refrain yourself. I want you to restrain yourself and not do that. Don't follow that conclusion. As I said before, this is going to get a little more complicated as we go on. But that's how you could understand it until now. Yeah, Viva.
This is a case where somebody else could also do it, so the Kohen would not have to be called.
Okay. This could come to something like that. Maybe if there's somebody around, you could say, hey, could you go do that? As opposed to me, there could be other options. And the truth is, if that was the situation, so then for sure. But right now we're talking about, like, in theory, in order to eke out what exactly the margins are. How do we apply these rules? Okay, so that's one situation. Is a kohen inside of a cemetery? O shehaya zaken ve'ena lefi chvodo. Or if someone was old and it's
beneath his
kavod, beneath his respect to do such a thing. What is that situation? Does Rashi say anything on this gemara here? Ve'ena lefi chvodo sheyashivena. Interesting, very interesting. What does Rashi say? Hold on. There's another wrinkle here that I'm not talking about, but we're going to leave it to the side for a second. Rashi brings in another pasuk, which is not what the pasuk we talked about, but we're not going to talk about it. Rashi says on the words, ve'ena lefi chvodo, he says one word. But it really changes a lot of the situation. What does Rashi say on Ve'ena lefi chvodo? It's probably 10 lines up in the Rashi lines. She yashivena. Mapike, she yashivena. That you would return it. Why does Rashi need to say that? What's Rashi's chiddush? Rashi doesn't talk about every single word in the Gemara. Why does Rashi feel the need to say that word? What, meaning, Rashi has an implicit question. As the book says, what's bothering Rashi? What's bothering Rashi? Rashi read the words, put yourself in Rashi's living room. or in his shul in Worms, which you can still see. They say it's the same chair that he sat in. I don't know. But let's say you're sitting in that chair and you're reading this Gemara. You don't have Rashi yet because you are Rashi. You don't have Rashi. You read the words of Eino Lefi Chvodo. It's beneath his honor. It's not in accordance to his honor. What is your problem with those words? Or what is your question, not your problem? What is your question you have about those words? What aspect of this activity is beneath his honor? Now, there are many different things that go on when you see a lost item. First of all, you see it, then you have to walk over to it, then you pick it up, then you bring it back home, or you bring it back to the person. So says Rashi, which aspect part of those is really the part which is beneath his dignity?
Well, you have to identify who it would belong to, who could possibly belong to.
Maybe because Zaken, he's old, he's not able to physically bend to pick it up.
It doesn't seem like that, because the reason they tell us is because it's about kavod, it's about honor, not about ability.
I mean, it's like if you see a toy, he would see a toy. I mean, would he be the person to pick up a toy and say, wait, you lost this?
So Rashi is saying to Mincy, that's not the problem. Uh-huh. It's not beneath his dignity to pick something up. Anyone can pick something up. Beneath his dignity?
To go bring it back to somebody.
In other words, he has a kid and say,
to go to somebody, you don't know who it is. But this wise rabbinic figure, I assume it's Bezakein, oftentimes, implicitly refers to someone who's wise. This rabbinic figure is going to go walk around town trying to figure out whose item this is. That's beneath his dignity. He should be doing something, giving over his wisdom in the Beit Midrash. He should be leading people in davening. He should be an example for other people. Now, this could be an example of other people, but the point is, it's beneath his dignity to go figure out who this is and then to go walk it back to them. So says Rashi, what is Eino Lefi Chvodo talking about? Not picking it up. Anyone could pick it up. It's right next to him. He could pick it up. What it's talking about is making him go return it. That's another interesting wrinkle to how we define this concept.
It depends what it is. If it's an object, okay, it might be a waste of his time.
It could be. It depends.
Also, if it was an animal or something, he'd have to look after it until he found the owner. That would be an awful. Maybe that would be a waste of his time.
It could be
too much bother.
Right.
Wouldn't they use different language if it were a living thing?
I think it's trying to be most inclusive.
He's a Zakein here, or does it? Because we had other instances where it said it was his dignity. That wouldn't say Zakein. So
the Rashi said Chashuv in the other case.
Yeah. Right.
He was an important person.
This is just
an example. The Gemara is giving us lists. Although it is an interesting conceptually to keep in mind that oftentimes when a pasuk gives us a list of things, the question is always going to be, are these examples or specifics? Is it these and none else? Or is it just examples? There could be other similar things. So those are two categories. Number one, a kohen in a cemetery, or a kohen to go into the cemetery, or a zakein to return an item which is beneath his dignity. What's a third one? O shehaita malacha shelo miruba mishel chavero. What does that mean? So who is the chaver?
The person who lost the object.
Okay, so remember your name.
Rina.
So Rina is saying that the chavero is referring to the owner of the object. That basically what it's saying is, my time or my work is more valuable than me figuring out your item. Me trying to give back the item. That's one possibility. What's another possibility? Meruba Michel Chavero.
There are two people.
Maybe there's somebody else around. I don't know, a lawyer who works from 8 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night, and you have an 8 to 5 secretarial job. I don't know, whatever the situation is, right? That the person's time is more valuable, or a person's effort. The Gemara itself says, Shehaita Malacha Shelo Meruba, that his work requires more effort. Not necessarily money or anything like that, but it requires more effort from his friend. So that's one possibility. What I find interesting here, and this doesn't even require too much analysis, where is the Rashi on this? What does Rashi say on this line? The truth is, Rashi doesn't have this line. He does have a line that's in reference to the same idea, but with different words. And this is something you oftentimes find, that the manuscripts of the Gemara in France were different than the manuscripts in the Gemara in Spain, or somewhere else, in North Africa, or whatever it was. And Rashi's Gemara has different words. If you look at Rashi, what does Rashi's bolded word say? O shehaya batel mimelacha shelo. What does that mean? Batel mimelacha shelo.
We take him away from his work.
Batel, like batala. He's waste, going to waste or nullify
his work.
His work. So it says Rashi, sheyibatel bahashavata miruba al demei haaveda. That his wasting or the amount that he would nullify in his bringing back this item is greater than the actual value of the item. Let's say you're a hotshot lawyer and you get paid $150 an hour. That might not even be so hotshot. That might not even be so much.
More like $400 an hour.
Whatever. So if you're a regular lawyer and you get paid $150 an hour, how long would it take you to bring back this item? Let's say you know whose it is. Let's say you're next door to their house. So if you can pick it up and bring it back, it's 3 minutes. So divide and carry the three. You figure out what the math is, and then you figure it out if it's worth your time. Rashi says it's not just about time, it's about
the value
of the item. If this is somebody's peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I'm not going to waste my time bringing it across town. If this is somebody's laptop, so then I have to make the calculation. How long is it going to take me to bring this laptop back to my friend? Am I going to lose the amount of money which is equal to that laptop? Depends how good of a lawyer you are. So that's what Rashi says. You don't see that anywhere in our Gemara. Our Gemara is not talking about that. Our Gemara says, O shehaita melacha shelo miruba mishel chavero. And there are no other words that seem to be based on Rashi's girsa, on his text. So it would seem that, at least according to Rashi, it's unclear if the Gemara had a different intention, or that this text of the Gemara had a different intention, but at least according to Rashi, Rashi's interpreting this line to mean another category of a person who would not have to bring an item back, she'ein darko litol, the chol davar she'ein darko litol, would include a person whose time or work is more valuable than the item.
I don't know, it seems a little gaivadic to me. What might be worth...
Right, so one man's treasure, one man's garbage, another man's treasure.
Yeah,
so good. So why is this a category? What are we trying to define? Let's keep in mind what we're trying to define, and we'll have to end with this before we get to the exciting part. We'll get to it next week. But what are we trying to define? What are we trying to define with this category?
Do you have to, the parameters, do you have to lose money?
Not exactly. Not exactly. That's not what we're trying to define. What's the heading of this part of the Gemara?
Wouldn't it be value?
Say again? Oh, no. What's the heading? The heading was from the Mishnah. How do we define She'ein Darko Litol? What is the definition of something which you do not normally pick up?
What is value?
So number one, we have the coin in the cemetery. That's a halachic category. You are halachically not, it's halachically atypical for you to pick that up. That's category number one. Halachically atypical. What's category number two?
Azakin.
Disrespectfully atypical. This is not something that typically, in accordance with your respect, not necessarily halachic, but obviously that's halachic, not something that the activity is beneath your respect. And now we have number three. Monetarily or possibly practically, pragmatically, it's atypical for you to pick it up. So we're not saying a person who's a hotshot lawyer is too important for simpletons. We're just trying to define what's something that he normally picks up. What's a thing that he would typically do? And whatever he would typically do, that's what we're going to make him do in this situation. But if it's something that's atypical, that's out of the ordinary for him, whatever that person is, whoever that person is, whatever they do, it could be a garbage man, and for them, it's not normal to pick up something else. right? For whatever it's, whatever, and I don't mean in his job, because that would really knock out almost everything. But but whatever it is typical for a person to do, that's what we're defining. So in this situation, the way that I drew it up was a hotshot lawyer. But it could be anything. That it could be, Minty was saying monetarily, and from Rashi, it definitely sounds monetary. It doesn't. It definitely sounds monetary, because the Gemara itself doesn't sound that way. It just sounds like he's got more stuff to do, right? The Gemara's words were, Shahitam lacha shalom meruba mishel chavero. He has more stuff to do. He could be the busiest garbage man in town. He's the only guy, he could be Tevye the milkman. And he's just busy going around all day. He goes, leaves early in the morning, comes back late at night. He has no time to sit and learn, right? He could just be Tevye. It's not talking about a big hotshot, you know, person. He just has more things to do. Rashi, however, says it's monetary. Right? Rashi says that it's based on how much money. And based on that, I gave my example, which makes it sound like it's a little pretentious or whatever. But that's not what we're talking about. We're trying to define what's a thing that a person normally picks up. Sometimes there are things they don't pick up for halakhic reasons. Sometimes there are things they don't pick up for respectful reasons. And then there are some things they don't pick up because practically it's not worth their time. Just working out the math. So in this situation, we figure out what is something they typically do, would pick up, and then we apply it to the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. We don't figure out, you know, how pretentious a person is and then figure out if they should do it. Because that would obviously not be within line, within the parameters of mitzvahs. So what we're talking about here, these are the three categories. And now once we give over those three categories, we have to, we'll finish with a question so you can think about it a little bit. And it comes back to something we were talking about earlier, before. So you could already figure out at least the first stage of it. That's why the Pasuk has to tell us specifically that you can hide yourself from it. And then the Gemara asks, Lamai itzrich kra. Lamai, what does lamai mean?
For what?
My, lama. For what? Itzrich. You see any Hebrew word in there?
Tzarich.
Why do I need kra? What's a kra? A pasuk. Why do I need a pasuk to tell me these things? Aren't these things obvious? For one reason or another, each one of these three categories, we would have already known without the pasuk. How that is? That's your homework. We'll talk about it next week. Okay. Evan Shav, a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll see you next time. Yeah.